Okay, tonight's topic we decided to I decided to talk about women and Talmud study revisited. Now it's revisited because it's a topic that I believe we've spoken about in the past, about women learning Gemara, what the opinions are. Normally, I think when I've given this shiur in the past, it's been titled something like From Satmar to Soloveitchik, or something like that. You know, the range of the opinions out there on the women, on the issue of women studying Torah Shebal Peh, Gemara specifically, serious Gemara specifically. So why are we talking about it again? So the impetus for this shiur was mostly the brouhaha that was created. I've been looking for a good place to use that word. I think this is like the perfect description. That was created by a Torah Web article that Rav Mordechai Willig Shlita, Mori Virabi, wrote on Parshas Ekev, where he suggested reevaluating Talmud education for women in modern Orthodox schools, whether it's something that should be done across the board in modern Orthodox schools that maybe 40 years into the experiment, I guess, it requires some reevaluation. That's what he had suggested. And that set off a storm of responses and people who were mostly very upset, at least the most vocal ones, as normally happens, were extraordinarily upset by what Rabbi Willig wrote. And I thought that since it's a hot topic and it's something that people are discussing, it would be a good time to revisit the issue. Also, recently I got a hold of, and this has existed for years, but I had never seen it before, a speech that was given by Harav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, at the opening of the Mayanot Girls High School in Teaneck, New Jersey. Rav Lichtenstein's Talmidim were instrumental in opening up the school, and the school is built on the platform of a girls' education that involves very serious Gemara learning. Rav Lichtenstein himself built a girls' school in Israel, also based on that very same platform, and he himself gave shiurim there, and his daughter runs the place. So I had never really seen written up Rav Lichtenstein's approach to the issue. I just sort of made assumptions about what his approach was, and in fact it was much more far-reaching than I had ever assumed. So my own understanding of the topic last time I ever discussed it, it was not as complete as my understanding of the topic is now, because I was able to see more. I saw what Rav Lichtenstein had to say. And as far as, you know, a lot of people say, well, what do you think? My own view is, not only is it still evolving, it's largely irrelevant. Because I think on a matter like this, that has such massive klal-related issue, that has such repercussions for the way we educate our children, which is about as important an issue as can be, I think this kind of discussion, actual debate and actual opinions, should belong to Gedolei Yisrael and people who are actually involved in girls' and women's education. I am neither of those things. I lack the expertise, the halachic expertise, or the big picture view to be able to formulate an opinion that matters on these things, and I certainly have little to no experience with girls' or women's education, other than the shiurim for women that I give in shul, and learning with my daughter, who is a precocious 6 years old, but still 6 years old. So it's somewhat limited in terms of what, very limited in terms of my understanding of women's education. So what I'm going to do is not going to present my opinion or a shita of any sort. What I want to try to do is give a little bit of context for Rabbi Willig's statement, try to explain where he's coming from, try to explain, to the best of my understanding, Rav Lichtenstein's approach, and just keep in mind, as I'm trying to explain where all of this comes from and what the debate is all about, just keep in mind that I never spoke to Rav Willig about this, nor did I ever speak to Rav Lichtenstein, Zichron Levracha, about this. So it's really a lot of conjecture and just trusting my study of the sugya and my study of what they wrote. Now, before we begin the actual study of the sugya, The responses online to Rabbi Willig, it feels funny to even have to talk about responses online, because obviously responses online degenerate very quickly and become just bitter and silly and vindictive and mean and really things generally that don't deserve a response. So some of the criticism, much of the criticism of Rabbi Willig, we just have to categorically reject as either absurd or just people who weren't thinking straight. For example, someone claiming that, oh, he must hate women because he doesn't want them learning Talmud. I guess if you never met Rav Willig and you don't know anything about him or anything that he's done in his entire life, one could draw that conclusion the same way you could draw that conclusion about anybody that you haven't met and never spoke to and never done. But a man who worked so hard to solve the Aguna crisis and who's done so much, and if you ever speak to him about personal advice on men, women issues and marital issues, the way he advises and the way he deals and the respect that he accords women is second to none. And that's obviously a ridiculous and insulting and upsetting type of accusation. Others say that he wants uneducated women because he feels threatened by strong, educated women. Rabbi Willig is in a position that he doesn't have to feel threatened by anybody. And these passionate articles about how intelligent women are and how they need to be educated is a straw man. Rabbi Willig agrees. He agrees that women are very, very intelligent and that women need to be educated, and they need to be educated intensely. What he disagrees with many of the people who write these articles is what the best way to do that is. Should it be with an emphasis on Talmud study, or should it be with an emphasis in other areas? But that's a totally, that has nothing to do with wanting women to be weak, wanting women to be stupid, wanting women to be uneducated. He has no such agenda. And again, it's somewhat of a straw man argument, because people paint, oh, there is this person that wants women to be uneducated, and then they'll go on for five pages about how terrible that is. Yeah, of course it's terrible to want women to be uneducated, but that has nothing to do with anything that Rabbi Willig said. The third thing you see that people argue, and this is a funny one, because sometimes people say he's a hypocrite. And others say, not a hypocrite, but he never supported women's learning. They say he's a hypocrite because he used to support women's learning, now he doesn't. And others say, no, he never supported women's learning in the first place, so you can't take... So I'm not sure which one. I guess if you accept one, you can't accept the other. The facts as I know them are that 40 years ago, and the picture is going around online, when Rav Soloveitchik gave a Gemara Shiur in Stern College, Rabbi Willig was there, and he wasn't stam there just because. He was there because he was the one that was supposed to continue to give that Gemara Shiur at Rav Soloveitchik's instruction. So his Rebbe told him very clearly that he should teach Gemara to women, and he did so. And after 40 years, I don't think it's hypocrisy to say that something needs to be reevaluated. Just to pick as an example, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichrono Livracha, said at a conference of educators a number of years ago, when they asked him about the wisdom of coeducation, he said that it's clearly a bidiyavet, it's clearly something that we should not be striving for, but everyone needs to know their community and what will work best in the community. And then he added, and it's important to reevaluate once in a while. Just because something was right 20 years ago doesn't mean that it's right now. He also said it's important not to reevaluate every 5 minutes, because an institution needs stability, but it's important to reevaluate and think about, are we doing things right? Could things be done in a better way? So given that, I don't think it would be called hypocrisy if 40 years later someone says, you know what, let's reevaluate and think about whether something is being done properly. And then the fourth criticism that you, there may be more, but I can't get through all of them, you know, there's only so much time. The fourth criticism that I've seen out there is that another example of a YU rabbi who's out of touch with reality, talking from his ivory tower in Yeshiva University. And that's just patently absurd. Rabbi Willig is a shul rabbi who deals with real people in Riverdale, which is sort of place where you have to deal with a lot of real people and real issues. And he's on the Beis Din, and he's dealing with lots and lots of people every single day in all sorts of different circumstances. It's not from a lack of understanding of what drives people and what people go through on a day-to-day basis and what people experience on a day-to-day basis. Again, if you don't know Rabbi Wilk, it's very easy in general. That's the way Lashon Hara works. If you don't know someone, it's very, very easy to talk badly about them. Once you meet them and you actually speak to them and you realize how special they are and what their uniqueness is, it becomes much more difficult. Now, on the flip side, Mayanot, the school, the principal of the school, Mrs. Khan, issued a statement as well, and that was a much more respectful statement. And in her statement, she wrote as follows. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but essentially it said that in response to Rav Willig's recent call for communal cheshbon and nefesh about the place of advanced Talmud Torah, including Gemara study and modern Orthodox girls' education, I would like to share some thoughts based on my own experience, which again, that's valuable because this is someone who's on the front lines dealing with this, who's actually educating women. There is always a need for cheshbon and nefesh as we strive to educate toward reverence and faith in our increasingly cynical and disaffected culture. Right? Cheshbon and nefesh, reevaluating, is always good. And she goes on to say, I'm skipping around, it is best accomplished by engaging our students more fully, not less, in the sacred enterprise of Talmud Torah. Deep exposure to Torah texts and Torah personalities is the most authentic way to help students develop the conviction that the Torah speaks to them as individuals and is the bedrock of their religious identity. Meaning she's saying what Rav Willig's concern is, that there is a lack of connection to Torah and to Yiras Shamayim, is best addressed not by removing Talmud study, but by intensifying Talmud study. Because how can a connection to Torah be something that hurts us in our connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam? The way we connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam is through Torah. And she goes on to say, in my experience, young women who are most engaged in Talmud Torah are among those who are most invested in Avodas Hashem in general. That if a woman is very interested in Talmud Torah, it's probably because she's interested in the Dvar Hashem. While some find deep religious meaning in pursuits such as prayer, community service, chesed, and activism, I mean, there are certainly no shortage of ways that people express a sense of spirituality and a sense of connectedness, but many are transformed into Ovdot Hashem through their involvement in the awesome experience of challenging, rigorous Talmud Torah, which by definition includes Gemara study. So that's what her argument is, and she says this is absolutely critical to understand. In our modern Orthodox community, the alternative to advanced Talmud Torah is not emuna, meaning she's arguing that Rabbi Willig's picture that he's painting, that you can either have serious Talmud Torah or you can have emuna. She's saying that is not the choice. It's either serious Talmud Torah or apathy. That's the true choice. Now, that it was a very, very well-worded and well-said response. I did find it a little bit disappointing in the following sense. And disappointing not in a way that I blame her in any way, but I guess incomplete as far as a response goes, because I don't think a complete response could have been fashioned in the time in between Rav Willig's article and now. I think it's going to take years to develop the response that I think is necessary. What Rav Willig essentially did, for those who didn't read the article, is he pointed out something that, in my opinion, is an incontrovertible fact. And that is, and it's, I think this is the opinion of everyone across the board from right to left, that women's Talmud study led directly to a bunch of educated women who needed some way to, what are they going to do with this expertise now? So that led directly to the concept of Yoatzot Halacha. Yoatzot Halacha, people who deal, who focus on Hilchos Nida and deal with Hilchos Nida issues and deal with halachos involving all sorts of shilas that come up. So that was a clear line that could be drawn from A to B. Yoatzot Halacha led directly to women being ordained as rabbis. The Yeshivat Ma'arat, every single woman who was ordained, said, we owe our success to Yoatzot Halacha. Women being ordained as rabbis has begun to lead already directly to women being counted toward a minyan and toward complete, to egalitarianism, to total egalitarianism, because if a woman could lead a congregation, how could she not be part of a congregation. So A, let to B, let to C, let to D. There's no question. Everyone from right to left seems to agree to that. Meaning all the people who are involved in steps A, B, C, and D, people involved in step B said we owe this to step A, step C said we owe it to step B, and step D said we owe it to step C. Now, it's a matter of perspective now. So some people will say that, okay, if A led to B, let C led to D. So now we know what leads to D. We know we don't like D. So let's throw out every step that led to that. Whereas others would say, no, let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. Let's figure out, reasonable minds can disagree, where in that continuum we want to draw the line and say, this is good and this is bad. Some people may draw it in one place and some people may draw it in another place. But most people most people in the Orthodox community would agree that just changing the halacha entirely and total egalitarianism is something that's clearly not a Torah value. So that's something, and it's against the halacha. So most of us would agree that that's certainly bad. But the question really then becomes, and the question that I guess Rabbi Willig is formulating, is how do we deal with the fact that A leads to B, which leads to C, which leads to D? What do we do to see to it that we don't get to that point? So Rabbi Willig's suggestion is, well, maybe we need to reevaluate whether we should do A entirely, whether women should be engaged in deep Talmud Torah. The response to that has to ultimately be, and again, I don't fault Mayanot for not issuing this response, because I don't think a thought-out, reasoned response can be issued in a matter of days or weeks or even months. The response has to be, we are going to include more Yiras Shamayim, more of a Vedeli. We're going to make it very clear to our girls, to our students, that when we teach them Talmud, we're not teaching them Talmud because of any secular agenda, because of any feminist agenda, because of anything that, anything a boy can do, I can do better. We're doing it because of Yiras Shamayim, because of Avas Hashem, and we're going to develop that sense of Yiras Shamayim in a way that it won't lead all the way to D, all the way to total egalitarianism, which is contrary to halacha. That has to ultimately be the response. Now, obviously, that was not in the response. And again, I don't fault her for two reasons. First of all, it's impossible to formulate how that's going to happen in such a short period of time. And second, it's very hard to respond fully when you feel that your entire existence has been called into question. So, whether it was intended or not, clearly there's going to be, if someone called my entire existence, would write an article that would say, we really need to reevaluate whether we need rabbis in Orthodox shuls, I might issue a response that maybe is less than respectful or less than, so she did a very nice job in terms of being respectful, but I think it's just important to note that the response is incomplete on that level, unless she's responding by saying, I disagree with the entire picture. I don't think A leads to B, leads to C, leads to D. I think A leads to more Yiras Shamayim and only great things, in which case I think she's being dishonest, because that's clear. I think that would be dishonest to say that. Of course it does. Of course it leads to Yoatzot, which leads to women rabbis, which leads to, I think the continuum is very, very, and the causation over there is very, very clear. It's just a matter of how do we address it? How do we see to it that our daughters are getting the right message when they're being taught in this way? Now to the halacha a little bit, and then we'll revisit Rav Lichtenstein's view and Rav Ulig's view at the end. As a classic halachic topic, the truth is, if you were to study this area of halacha the same way we study most areas of halacha, by opening up a Gemara, learning the sugya, learning it through with the Rishonim, and following it through to Shulchan Aruch, it would be a pretty open and shut case, and it would be pretty charedi, meaning it would be something that would be very limiting in terms of women's view. A simple, straightforward limud would lead to the conclusion that women should be very limited in their education. But it should be pointed out, a simple, straightforward limud would also lead us to the conclusion that it is an issur d'oraisa to shower on Yom Tov, and that men may never look in a mirror. If you just go through the simple progression of Gemara to Shulchan Aruch, but there are certain halachos that are, not many at all, but there are certain halachos that really do depend on the culture, that really do depend on the time and the needs of society. It's very limited, the number of halachos, but this may be one of those cases. And I think it's clear that there's one of those cases. By this time, pretty much the entire world outside of Satmar has agreed that this is one of those cases, that the way we educate our girls today cannot be the same way they were educated 200 years ago. It just cannot be. It just will not work, and the halacha allows for that. Why does the halacha allow for that? So let's study the sugya a little bit. So the truth is, when you talk about Talmud Torah for women, what you really need to talk about are three separate questions. First of all, what, if anything, are women obligated to learn? And one would think that you should prioritize that over anything else, certainly what we're obligated to do. Second, if a woman wants to learn more than she's obligated, is she permitted to do so? Meaning, mitzvah seishas man grama, women are permitted to volunteer even though they're not obligated. A woman wants to shake a lulav, and we laud her for that. We think it's a wonderful thing. She wants to sit in sukkah. We think it's a wonderful thing, even though she's not obligated. So would we put Talmud Torah in that same category? And third, forgetting about an individual woman and whether she can volunteer to do more, how do we set up our educational institutions that are meant for the masses, that aren't meant for an individual woman? And the answer may be different for an individual person who has a specific interest versus the way you would set up an institution that's to educate everybody. And that's true of men and women. Meaning the way I would educate my child, if I was his only Rebbe, if I was the one teaching my child, would probably be somewhat different than the way the school educates. And one of my children said to me last night, the reason this year is Wednesday night this week, not Tuesday night, is because my kids were begging me. I hadn't taken them to a Yankee game all year, which we then remembered that I did, but whatever. Okay, so I took him to a Yankee game last year. I said, can't cancel this year. He said, move it to Wednesday night. So we moved it to Wednesday night. So in the car ride back, I don't know how this came up, one of my children said, you know, I would think that there have to be more important things to be learning in school that they should be teaching than seven ways to say Manishtana in different languages. I would think there's got to be things that kids need to know more than that. That's a very keen observation, right? If I was teaching my child Torah and I knew that I had a limited amount of time, I probably wouldn't teach him how to say the Manishtana in French and Spanish. I would probably come up with something else to do with him during that time. Meaning the way we would educate an individual very often is different than the way we educate the masses. Why do they do it? Because it's fun, it's cute, whatever. But if it's my own kid, I don't care fun and cute so much. Whatever he can handle, I'm going to suffer like Keturah, right? The Gemara says you're supposed to do whatever he can handle and try to make him succeed with proper encouragement, of course. But anyway, so those are the three basic questions. Now, the Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Chav Tes Amud Beis is very clear that women don't have an obligation to teach Torah to their children, the Gemara says, because they have no obligation to learn Torah. The Gemara says, "Ihi minolan de lo mechayva, d'chsiv v'li maditem v'lo maditem. Kol she mitzuva lilmod, mitzuva lelamed. V'kol she eno mitzuva lilmod, eno mitzuva lelamed." Only someone who's commanded to learn is commanded to teach. How do I know that she's not commanded to learn Torah? Someone who their parent was obligated to teach them Torah have an obligation to learn Torah themselves when they grow old enough. But when their parent was not obligated to teach them, has no obligation to learn on their own. And since the pasuk says b'neichem v'lo b'noseichem, the chiyuv to teach a child Torah is a chiyuv to teach a son Torah, not a daughter. Therefore, the woman, when she grows up, has no chiyuv to learn Torah on her own, and therefore she also has no chiyuv to pay it forward and to teach Torah to the next generation. So, as a matter of halachic requirement in terms of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, the Gemara is very clear. Men are chayiv in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Women are not chayiv in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Meaning, and for someone to argue that point would be probably beyond the pale. For someone to say that as a technical requirement of Talmud Torah, women have the same chiyuv as men, that would be the same as saying that as a technical requirement of Netilas Lulav, women have the same chiyuv as men. That is simply factually not true to anyone who has a commitment to the halachic system and to Torah Min HaShemayim in the way that it's handed down through the ages through Chazal. Now that's one Gemara about a chiyuv of Limud Torah, qua lima Torah, as far as the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is concerned. So again, everyone from Satmar to Salvechik, Rav Lichtenstein, everyone agrees, anyone in the Orthodox camp is essentially going to agree that the nature of the Chiyuv is somewhat different. Now, the other sugya is a sugya Maseches Sota, which is an odd place to find this discussion. The sugya Maseches Sota talks about if a woman is accused of being unfaithful to her husband, and she has to drink these special waters, the Mei Sota. So the Mei Sota can have one of two effects on her. Either it could, if she's innocent, it can be a tremendous source of bracha, and she'll have children, and she'll have easy deliveries, and she'll have all sorts of wonderful things. Or if she's guilty, it will kill her. It will destroy her. However, the Mishnah says, if she has a zuchus, it could be tola. That sometimes, even if she's guilty, but she has some sort of special merit, that could dull the effects or delay the effects of the Mei Sota. What kind of zuchus can delay such effects? So the Gemara says, the zuchus of Torah. So the Gemara goes on a whole long discussion. Zuchus of Torah? What kind of zuchus of Torah would a woman have? She has no mitzvah of Talmud Torah. She's not a mitzvah v'yosa. Someone who's not commanded in a mitzvah has a lower level chiyuv than someone who is commanded in a mitzvah, and therefore it's not as great of a zuchus. So why would that zuchus of Torah be at all helpful to her? And it's got to be the zuchus of Torah, because Torah is megin, the Gemara says. Just like Torah is compared to ar, ki ner mitzvah v'torah ar. Ma'or megin li'olam, av Torah megina li'olam. Just like ar protects the world, Torah serves to protect the world. So the Gemara goes on, after a long discussion, Ravina amar li'olam zuchus Torah. It is the zuchus of Torah. What's the zuchus? Udkam reinam tzu v'yosa. Because they encourage their children to learn Torah, they encourage their husbands to learn Torah, they have the zuchus of Torah. But the Gemara doesn't conceive of the possibility that the zuchus of Torah is their own learning Torah, because they don't have the chiyuv of Talmud Torah. And then the Gemara quotes, or the Mishnah actually says, the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, that kolam alamid is bito Torah ki ilum alam da tiflus, that it was ki ilum alam da tiflus, that teaching a girl Torah, and this is a very tricky word to translate, is as if one is teaching her tiflus. What does tiflus mean? So it's a machlokas rishonim, what exactly it means. Either something that lacks flavor, that's very bland, that she's not going to have an appreciation of the value of the Torah, or it means worse, that it's like teaching immorality, and it's going to cause her to do terrible things. So the Gemara seems to discourage on that level teaching girl Torah. But the Gemara says, the Gemara quotes an opinion, I'd rather teach my daughter Tiflus and have her at least have that protection of the great schar of Talmud Torah. Meaning, even though it does, you do run the risk of maybe it having a negative effect, but ultimately the zuchus of Torah is a zuchus like no other. And therefore, ultimately, it will serve to protect her. So it's a fascinating discussion whether it's good to teach her Torah. Teaching her Torah is like teaching her tiflus, foolishness, immorality, blandness, something. Or, like the one opinion says, most women prefer tiflus. Let her have tiflus, and at least that way she'll be able to have the zuchus of Torah along with the tiflus. Now, is there any part of Torah that a woman must learn, even going with the classical approach of the way it would seem to emerge from the Gemara? So the Ramah writes explicitly in Shulchan Aruch, and I think this was not really ever disagreed upon by anybody. The Ramah writes, Mikol makom chayev ha'isha lilmod dinim hashayachim le'isha, that a woman has an obligation to learn those dinim that are relevant to a woman. Why does a woman have an obligation to learn those dinim? If learning Torah is tiflus and it's terrible, and so why does a woman have an obligation to learn those dinim? So very simply put, a woman has an obligation to be a Shomer Torah mitzvahs also. A woman has an obligation to be an Orthodox Jew as well. So an observant Jew as well. It's impossible to be an observant Jew if you don't know what that means, if you don't know what you have to do. So obviously, part of the definition of being an observant Jew is learning those halachos that are relevant to you. It's over here, and how far we understand that heter of the heter, so to speak, of the Ramah, not a heter, that basic fundamental idea of the Ramah, how far we take it, that serves as the first source that can really lead us into women's Talmud study. How so? I remember I once asked Rav Schechter, what does it mean exactly that a woman is going to only learn the dinim that are shayach to her? She should open up some sort of Kitzer English book that tells us, you know, bullet points do this, do this, do this, do this. Is that what it means? And she's going to have any understanding of the halacha? He said, no, she's going to learn it for Shabbos. She should learn the sugyas of Masechta Shabbos, learn it through with the Torah, the Beis Yosef, the Rishonim, the same way we would learn it, but through the Shulchan. Then she'll have an understanding of how Hilchos Shabbos works. And any case that comes up, she'll have some understanding of why it changes and what's a daraisa and what's a drabanan and what's a minag. And that's the way to learn. You can't learn halacha if you're just going to get a kitzer book that tells you do this, do that. No kitzer book is going to cover every circumstance. So that was his understanding. Obviously, others didn't share that understanding. Others thought that, then no, that it means just learn like a kitzer book. You know, the basic ideas of what are absolutely necessary in order to be an observant Jew. Now the Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah Perek Aleph Halacha Yud Gimel, the Rambam writes that a woman who learns Torah yesh la schar, does get schar. Avaleinu keschar ish, but it's not the same as the schar of a man because she's not mitzvah in the mitzvah. And he writes, even though afal pishi yesh la schar tzivu chachamim shelo yilamid adam esbito Torah mipnei sherov hanashim ein daita mechuvanos l'slami. That most of the women aren't going to be geared properly toward learning. They're not going to understand it fully. They're going to think that it's silly, and they're going to make a mockery of the Torah based on their inability to understand it properly. And that's why the Chum say called Maramis Bita Torah Kilulim de Tiflis. So the Rambam gives the second chink in the armor, so to speak, the second break, and that is Rov Hanashim, the Rambam writes. The Rambam very carefully doesn't say, this is what women are and women can't learn. He says, Rov Hanashim are not able to learn Torah seriously, but a woman who learns Torah gets schar. It's just not quite the same as schar of an ish, but she does get schar. So the clear implication of the Rambam is that there is a minority of women who are able to learn and who are not going to be kilum alam de tiflus, and who are going to be able to understand it very well, and will get schar. In the same way we encourage her to take a lulav, such a woman should be encouraged to learn Torah. It's not just a diuk in the Rambam. The Prisha writes this way explicitly on the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch, that it's only an issue of rov, but there are, the Prisha writes, avlim lamda liatzma anu rovin she yatza mea rov. If she learns on her own and we see she's motivated, so we see she's not part of the rov. And that's why we say that she gets schar. That's why the Rambam says that she gets schar. If she learned Torah and we see that she's interested and that she's capable, so then wonderful, then she should continue to learn Torah. The Torah Tamima has such a similar comment in Parshas Ekev, also about that if a woman is self-motivated, so that's the second possible point of view, that maybe Talmud study for women is not completely forbidden, nor is it limited to the halachos that are nogea to women. Maybe it's complete Talmud study, but only for a limited group of women who show an interest in doing so, in learning. In learning. That's what would seem to emerge from the Rambam. Now, it's important to analyze why would the Rambam think that Rov women are a certain way and some women are a different way? And is it possible that with societal changes, that majority has shifted? One of the more striking things in Rav Lichtenstein's speech that he gave at Mayanot was that he alluded to it. He didn't say it straight out, but he alluded to the idea that the history of not teaching women Torah is not something that we are here to judge today, he says. It's not really our job to judge right now, but the clear implication is that we don't need to explain why women do learn now. We need to really do more explaining as to why we didn't have women learning in a serious way in the past. He writes, this is not the occasion to examine whether that was justified historically. And I think what he's probably referring to is that what the Rambam and the Gemara, certainly in Rav Lichtenstein's point of view, are saying is that in a time where women have no education whatsoever, and that was much of human history, where women were not taught to read and write, they were very limited in their ability to express themselves intellectually because they weren't given the tools to do so. So if you then put Torah, expose a woman like that to Torah, who has no sophisticated way of thinking whatsoever, can't even read and write, so Torah is going to sound silly. It's going to sound ridiculous. Someone who's completely untrained intellectually. And Rov Nashim may be that way in the times of the Rambam and the times of the Gemara. But the miut of women who were trained to be educated and to learn and to study, so they are just as intellectually capable as a man is. Rav Lichtenstein, I think, was saying that historically the humanity is going to have to answer as to why we haven't educated women for all those centuries and why it took us till the 20th century to really educate women in a meaningful way. But once we're doing that, well, then Torah is not going to have the negative effect, and then the majority of women shifts. It becomes the majority, become the educated who are able to handle Torah and to gain a lot out of Torah. Now, one more critical point, and probably the most famous maramakom in the entire sugya of women studying Torah, is the opinion of the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim in the Kutei Halachos, in the third parak of Maseches Sota, the Chafetz Chaim expressed why it is that he thought, and he doesn't say it in this way, but why it is that he thought that the Beis Yaakov movement was going to be a very positive step and a very important thing to do. And the Chafetz Chaim essentially said this point that we're making, not as strongly, but he essentially said that when women didn't know how to read and write, it made sense that women would not be educated at all. And that's why you have what the Gemara says, what the Shulchan Aruch says, what the Rambam says for Rov Nashim. If you look at the Taz, it's even stronger, that where women have no sort of education whatsoever. So a woman could be expected to be a mamin and to be someone who's a believer and who's a faithful of Edas Hashem without any intellectual stimulation, because it's not like she was getting it anywhere else either. However, now that women are being educated in Russian and whatever language of the place that they're being educated, he said, if Torah doesn't offer something similar, then a woman is not going to find any fulfillment in Torah, and we're going to lose her from Yiras Shamayim. Meaning, essentially, what the Chafetz Chaim is saying is, the goal is very clear. The goal is Avas Hashem, Yiras Shamayim, connecting to the Ribono Shel Olam. That we can all agree. Question is, what does it take to achieve that goal? So the Chafetz Chaim says, so we need to start teaching certain basic things. Tanakh, some Pirkei Avos. We need to start. Even that was a scandal. That was something that was not widely accepted. The Satmars, I think, Ad Hayom, don't teach much of Chumash, and certainly not in Hebrew, in the original Hebrew. If you ever read the biography of the Satmar Rebbe, one of the biographies that was called The Rebbe, The Extraordinary Life and World View of Rabbeinu Yoel, titled on the Satmar Rebbe, Zuchuso Yagin Aleinu, that's the name of the book, that's all the name of the book. They tell a story about how the Satmar Rebbetzin didn't understand why can't a girl came home, someone came to the Satmar Rebbe all upset because his daughter came home with a notebook that said, Ani Ohev Es Habeged, and something like that, some very primitive, basic Hebrew sentence. And the guy was upset, why is my daughter learning this? She shouldn't be learning such things. So the Rebbetzin sort of intercepted this guy before he got to the Rebbe and said, what's the big deal? What's wrong with her knowing something like that? And the Rebbe heard the commotion and they brought the case, and the Rebbe said, he's right. This is not, our grandmothers didn't know such things. Didn't know. It's wrong. The Hebrew is wrong. It's an Eo Hevet, right? Our grandmothers didn't know from such things, and they were still okay. So a very, very limited view. But the Chafetz Chaim championed the idea of a broader education with the goal of Yiras Shamayim, and that's clearly the goal. Now,
even going to those, there were some. I mean, they have to teach them halachos that were.
They're relevant to them. Meaning, so watch your mother and see how she cooks and how she observes Shabbos, and that's what you do.
So
that's the halachos. That's
it. There had to be the basis for thinking that they could understand the halacha. If you have to teach them halachos that are part of them, there is.
This view would hold. I don't want to spend too much time on this view, but this view would hold that, just basic behaviors. You see basic behaviors in mimetic tradition. You just see what mommy did. Now, Rav Soloveitchik, very clearly and very publicly, thought that women should learn Torah Shebal Peh, Gemara, on a very high level, Bizman Hazeh. Now, the only explanation that I was aware of for Rav Soloveitchik's opinion, until I saw Rav Lichtenstein, was his other son-in-law, Rabbi Twersky, Zichrono Levracha, in his eulogy for Rav Soloveitchik, wrote as follows. He writes, that the halacha prohibiting Torah study for women is not indiscriminate or all-encompassing. There's complete unanimity that women are obligated to study halachas pertaining to mitzvos which are incumbent upon them. The prohibition of teaching Torah Sheval Peh to women relates to optional study. If ever circumstances dictate that study of Torah Sheval Peh is necessary to provide a firm foundation for faith, such study becomes obligatory and obviously lies beyond the pale of any prohibition. Undoubtedly, the Rav's prescription was more far-reaching than that of the Chafetz Chaim and others, but the difference in magnitude should not obscure the fundamental agreement. Essentially, what Rav Twersky, Zichrono Levracha, was saying was that Rav Soloveitchik's approach was really the same as the Chafetz Chaim, but whereas in the times of the Chafetz Chaim, women were learning to read and write, in the times of Rav Soloveitchik, women were earning PhDs and MDs and JDs and getting all sorts of advanced degrees, and were exposed to very sophisticated thinking. So if such a woman is going to have a foundation in Emunah, it has to come with serious intellectual challenge, with serious intellectual study. Now, given that the whole goal is Yiras Shamayim, Avas Hashem, and that's very much the way Rav Lichtenstein spoke, with great passion about what Talmud Torah can do for women, Rav Willig said, well, let's analyze what has it done in the last 40 years. What has Talmud study done? And he just simply drew the line. Talmud study has led to, etc., what we said before. And unfortunately, there are many women who have been educated in learning of Gemara that have used that for goals other than Yiras Shamayim, or to push some sort of agenda that's contrary to the Torah. So for that reason, he said, given that backdrop, maybe we're not meeting our goals. Now, Rav Lichtenstein, in his, there's no doubt that Rav Willig is not saying Rav Lichtenstein would agree with him on this. You know, he's not addressing that. But Rav Lichtenstein clearly would passionately still argue, as he did until he died a few months ago, that women should still learn Torah in a very serious way. And he passionately argues that our primary focus has to be on connection to Hashem, Yiras Shamayim, and that a person has to be molded in not just in specific tasks or roles that a person has to do, but that a person has to be molded as an individual. A person has to define themselves with Torah. And the only way to do that is by having serious Torah study, Rav Lichtenstein argues. He also says that he can't imagine, and this really speaks to Rav Lichtenstein's life in itself, to what Rav Lichtenstein stood for. He says he can't imagine accomplishing goals such as Liyira, La'ava, Lishmar, L'davka, L'leches b'chol d'rachav without serious Gemara learning bi'iyun. Why? Because he was Rav Lichtenstein. That was his life. That was his entire connection to the Ribono Shel Olam, was through the beauty of Torah. He couldn't imagine that anyone could accomplish that without serious Talmud Torah. It didn't even cross his mind that it could possibly happen, that every fiber of one's being has to feel connected to Torah to be properly sensitive. His argument is not a feminist argument, it's not an agenda. His argument is simply one of his view of what it takes for a Yiras Shamayim. It's an unbelievable point of view that direct confrontation, direct involvement with Torah is the most proper way in his view. And he says we do this for two reasons. Out of respect for the Torah itself, that the Torah should not be watered down. We shouldn't give some sort of watered down version of Torah because that's disrespectful to Torah. And he said out of kavod for women. To treat women like a second class citizen, where he mocked the idea of tashbap classes. He said, I never heard of Tashbap. Is that halacha? Is that musar? Torah Sheval Peh. That was the abbreviation, Tashbap. So he said, if you're going to learn Gemara, learn Gemara. What does it mean, Tashbap? So his understanding was that if we're going to respect women and their intellect and what they're able to contribute, then they should be challenged on the highest level. Now, just some concluding. So that's where Rabbi Willig was coming from. That's where I realize I'm running out of time. So I guess just some concluding remarks. It's very important to realize that the fundamental agreement between every Gadol B'Yisrael, from the Satmar Rebbe to Rav Moshe Feinstein to the Chavetz Chaim to Rav Soloveitchik to Rav Lichtenstein to Rav Willig, every Gadol B'Yisrael, the fundamental yesod of everything was Yiras Shamayim, Avas Hashem, connection to the Ribono Shel Olam. The dispute was, what's the best way to accomplish that? When people are selling ideas based on values such as feminism, egalitarianism, you never heard those words come out of Rav Lichtenstein's mouth. His Talmidim, sometimes, but never out of his mouth. Gedolei Yisrael were never interested in secular values. Gedolei Yisrael are interested in Torah values. They're interested in Yiras Shamayim. And if we find that the words that are being used, even if people are arguing for the very same things that Rav Lichtenstein was arguing for, but they change the language, they're doing a tremendous disservice to the Torah community. Because once you start using social justice and egalitarianism and feminism, you're using concepts that aren't Jewish, and it's likely we're going to find ourselves with results that are foreign to Judaism. Meaning the first step to answering Rav Willick's challenge of saying, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and I think that women can learn Torah in a serious way, and it could still be Yiras Shamayim, is get rid of secular ideas and focus on Yiras Shamayim. Talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Talk about Yiras Shamayim. Don't talk about empowerment. Don't talk about egalitarianism and social justice. Those aren't valuable from a Torah perspective. And it's important to note, we need to inculcate more Yiras Shamayim certainly in the modern Orthodox world, and this was one of Rav Lichtenstein's greatest frustrations, that there wasn't enough of a passion for Torah in general in our world. Why is it? I was just visiting some summer camps this summer. Why is it? You go to any yeshivish camp, a summer camp, and they're learning 3 hours a day. And you know what? The kids are having a great time. They're playing sports and they're doing all sorts of things, and they're learning with Gemaras in front of them. I went to visit one of the modern Orthodox camps, and I spoke to one of the Rebbeim there. He said, you know, we have a closet full of Svarim that have gone untouched for 10 years. Because now in Chinuch, in our 40-minute Chinuch period, which, by the way, gets canceled for everything, but in that 40-minute period, if you can get in the last 3 minutes, you can get a moral lesson, then you are successful. After schmoozing for 37 minutes, you get a 3-minute moral. That's a terrible avla. What, just because a person wants to believe in the value of secular education and wants to believe in Zionism, that means that they have to be totally ignorant in Torah? That was Rav Lichtenstein's greatest frustration. When he started Gush, he didn't want to have a break in the afternoon. What do you need a break? Learn, learn, learn! There's no reason that we should accept for our boys or for our girls, but even for our boys, we should never accept a second-rate Torah education. We all have the ability to become great Talmidei Chacham.